Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Hey, you're listening to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Maria.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And on this episode of Books and Boba, we have a very special author interview for you. We are chatting with author Jesse Q. Sutanto, the author of Dial A for Aunties, The Obsession, and a lot more books coming down the pipe. Rira, we had a really great conversation with Jesse, didn't we?
Yeah, I was really excited to talk about this book, especially when we announced the book deal. We're like crazy rich Asians with weekend with Bernies. Like, yeah, this sounds like a fun comedy romp. And I wonder how this is going to work. How do you have a dead body at like a rich, spectacular wedding? I would like to know. So I'm really glad that we got a chance to read the book. You and I both loved it. We had a lot of fun talking about it with Jesse and talking about your trauma with aunties.
Yeah. And your love of murder fiction.
Yeah, I love murder so much. Count how many times I say I love murder in this episode, because it comes up quite a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So before we get to our interview with Jesse, Rira, what is Dial A for Aunties all about?
So Dial A for Aunties is a quirky novel, to say the least, that is equal parts murder mystery and rom-com. And it's about Madeline Chan, who is a wedding photographer at her family's wedding agency, I guess. She has three aunts and her mother. And one day, Madeline ends up accidentally killing her blind date. And she calls her aunties to help her get rid of the body. But unfortunately, the body gets accidentally shipped in a cake cooler to the over-the-top billionaire wedding that Medi and her aunts and her mom are working. And it's at like this private island resort on the California coastline. So it's a very big deal. And they have a body that they have to get rid of. So shenanigans happen. It's very funny.
Lots of hijinks in this one.
Lots of hijinks.
And we chat with Jesse about all of that. So without further ado, here is our interview with Jesse Q. Sutanto.
And we're here with Jesse Q. Sutanto, the author of Dial A for Aunties, as well as The Obsession. Welcome, Jesse. We're so excited to have you here on the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, full disclosure, we've been trying to make this interview happen for months, I feel like, because Jesse's calling in from, are you in Singapore now or Jakarta?
I'm in Indonesia. Okay. Yeah, I'm in Jakarta.
Yeah, so time zones are a thing.
Yeah. Well, so just starting off, Jesse, can you tell us a little bit about when you wanted to become a writer? Like, was writing always something that was part of your life? I heard that it took you like 8 manuscripts to get published. Like, it was a very long journey for you. So if you could expand a little bit on that.
On my never-ending saga. Yeah, I mean, I've always loved writing and books. And so I think it was around like 10 years ago now, actually longer than that. I was like, oh, I'm going to get a master's in creative writing. And my parents were like, oh, you should go to business school. And I was like, I'm going to go get my creative writing degree. And they were like, ugh. So, but they supported me anyway, because they're wonderful. And so I did that. And then it took a heck of a long time after graduating to, you know, to even get like one book published. So that was a really long and twisty journey with lots and lots of rejections. And for the longest time, I was kind of trying to find my voice. And I think around at that time, we didn't really have like that diverse, you know, push for more diversity in books. So I didn't think that, you know, publishing would want stories from people like me. And so for the longest time, I was just kind of writing like Caucasian characters and stuff like that. So I'm very grateful for all the authors, you know, who have kind of paved the way for us. Hey, that was such a derail.
I mean, you went from all that time to get your first book published to what, 6 books in the next 3 years plus a Netflix deal?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's 8 books. I think it's, you know, kind of just, I'm so grateful actually that it took me so long to get published, because it gave me time to learn how to write quickly and not keep second guessing myself. And so now I have learned how to like come out with, you know, a completed first draft in under 2 months.
Oh my God. That is insane.
Yeah. And I don't think I would have learned how to do that if I had, like, for example, my first book had gotten published, you know, then I would have just kind of gone along with like the usual publishing schedule. But now I have that. And then I have my parents who are constantly like, well, that's good, but when are you going to sell your next book? They make for really great motivation.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds super Asian of like, what's your next step? What's your like moving the goalpost for sure.
Oh my gosh. All the time.
I mean, like, so I follow you on Instagram and on Twitter. So I've been seeing all of your hilarious comedy sketches about Dal A for Aunties. Let me just say, you have like the fashion down for the aunties, for each auntie, because there are 4 aunties and you have very 4 distinct outfits for each auntie. And I was just like, wow, Jessie is hilarious. This book is hilarious.
They're all my mom's outfits.
Oh my God. So you just stole them from her closet? Or did you say, hey mom, like I'm doing like a sketch on TikTok, can I borrow some of your clothes?
It was I would just be like, I'm gonna borrow your clothes, and she's like, oh, finally, you know, you're gonna dress well. So and then she saw the videos and she was like, that's why you wanted the clothes.
she didn't say like how good you looked in them or anything.
She was just she was laughing so hard. And one of the videos I posted, and she said like she was having a really tough day, and you know, she was really grumpy, and then she saw it and she said like she started laughing and she was like, oh, I was trying to feel grumpy, and I couldn't stop laughing. So that was nice.
So your YA book, The Obsession, that also has accidental murder in it. Yeah. And this seems to be a plot point that you seem to enjoy writing. So can I just ask, like, is that one of your favorite tropes, I guess?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it is totally my favorite trope, because I love writing about good, I don't know if my characters are good, like normal people. kind of being shoved into, you know, really bad situations and seeing how they would react. I kind of feel like it's such a great catalyst.
Yeah, murder is a and pretty
it's really
good
funny
catalyst.
That you brought up the obsession, actually, because but yeah, I mean, speaking of the obsession, my mom disapproves of it. So just to put it out there, it does not have her stamp of approval.
I mean, that's even funnier because it's a YA book, and it's like, oh, people younger than you are reading this, and it has murder in it. Yeah.
How did she feel about Dolly for Aunties?
She loved it, but she was like, but you know, the aunties are not like me and my sisters. And she was saying like, you know, your big aunt is not like this. Your second aunt is not like this. And then I told her like, well, yeah, I had to kind of scramble their personalities so that nobody would recognize themselves. And then I told her like, so big aunt is actually, you know, a little bit more based on this other person. And she was like, oh my God, now I see it. So she had to kind of guess like who was based on whom after that. And she got all of them wrong.
Oh,
did a good job.
I mean, I gotta say, reading this book was very triggering for me as someone who does live with an aunt who does embody multiple characteristics of the aunties you featured. And I feel like I told you this before we started recording, but I just had one of those fights with my aunt earlier this week. So I was like, oh, I think a lot of people, especially like Asian Americans who are in that situation, will have a lot to relate to. And I mean, I've been telling this to my friends who are interested in reading the book. It's like, don't expect any like catharsis with the aunties. This is not a story about having the aunties come around to your point of view, because as we know in real life, that does not happen. The aunties are just a part of this story and like a catalyst for the hijinks, and just accept the aunties.
Yeah, it's a story about acceptance that, you know, you will never have victory over the aunties.
So I'm guessing that you have a pretty large family yourself, right, Jesse?
Yeah, I do. I have a huge family. My dad has six siblings and my mom has eight. And I think I have like over 40 first cousins.
Oof.
And we're always being compared, you know, to one another as we were like growing up. And everyone is like so close to everyone. And of course, everyone knows everyone. And yeah, there's so much drama.
I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, right? Because
yeah,
you're surrounded by so much love and you know that your family has your back and they will help you bury a body if need be.
Mm-hmm.
But also everyone knows each other and there are no secrets. Yeah. And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. It's a struggle that a lot of not just Asian Americans, but I guess just Asians who are in between, I guess, like between tradition and also trying to find independence. Those are two things that always seem to be at odds with each other. But what I really liked about your book was that you didn't make one better than the other. Like being loyal to your family wasn't a bad trait. Like there are some negative traits, obviously, to having nosy aunties, but there's also a lot of positive traits. Yeah. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that actually kind of happened in real life with my husband. Because my husband is English, and for a while we were actually living in England away from my family. And then we kind of made the decision, you know, like, okay, let's try living in Jakarta in the thick of it on the same street as like all of my aunts and uncles and my parents living like literally two doors away from us.
And that's how you do it.
And, and now, like, yeah. And, you know, sometimes I'm like having a bad day and I'm like, ah, we're going to move back to England. This is it. And my husband's like, actually, I kind of prefer it here, you know, like,
yeah, better food.
Kids, you know, yeah, like having all this, you know, noise and family around them. Like, so it's really nice to see that, like, oh, okay, you know, sometimes those family ties and like the weight and burden of a huge family is actually a good thing.
Well, like I feel like with girls, especially with women in big Asian households, the responsibility to be filial to your parents and to your aunts and uncles, it's huge. And if you're like the eldest daughter or granddaughter, it's even more responsibility. And I've noticed that in the book, like Mehdi's cousins, who are all boys, are like, I'm going to move out. I'm going to move to New York. I'm never looking back. You need to like set yourself free after you like get into college. And she's like, no, actually, you know, I'm going to stay behind because my mom and my aunts need me. And there's this extra pressure to stay. And I feel like that is such a, I don't know, it's such a gender norm for a lot of Asian communities, for sure.
Yeah. It's so interesting because we used to be very traditional, like the Chinese Indonesian community used to be like, you know, oh, boys, like we want, you know, a son, we need a son, blah, blah. But actually I've noticed that with my generation and kind of the previous generation, they're like, oh, we really want daughters because they're the ones who will like stay and look after us. So I'm like, oh, yay. Lucky us.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. So the story doesn't take place in San Gabriel, but the family of Mehdi, your main character, and her aunties live in San Gabriel. And that's actually my hometown. I went to high school there. Oh, I grew up there. So it was really like, I felt very represented in that first chapter.
I was surprised too, because Marvin started reading the book before I did. And he was like, hey, did you know that this is like set in America? Like it's set in California. And I was like, what? I thought this was going to be set in Indonesia. I don't know why that was in my head, but okay. So yeah, it was very surprising for me.
Yeah. I was going to ask like if you ever went to Top Island Dim Sum, because that was actually where I was setting the dim sum scenes.
I do know Top Island. It's not my family's preferred dim sum place. You know, every family has.
Do they prefer like Triple Eight?
No, we like King Wa in Alhambra, but that place just shut down because of COVID. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we need a new place, actually. But I do know Top Island. Now that you mentioned it, I can now visualize where that that dim sum scene took place.
Yeah, I love Top Island. They have like the best buns.
What's your go-to dim sum entree, I guess, for both of you? Because I'm not much of a dim sum person, so I'm curious.
My family's go-to is like the siomai and hakau. But I really love the, like all the buns, like the barbecue pork buns and the custard buns. And nowadays they have like the salted egg yolk buns. Oh my gosh, I love those.
Yeah, my go-to is always the turnip cakes. I love the pan-fried turnip cakes.
Ooh, yeah.
And then barbecue buns. I like the steam version, not the fried version.
Well, this talk became super Asian in like a couple seconds.
This is like if Koreans talk about like their favorite banchan or something.
No, man. Because with banchan, they just give you everything. You don't have a choice. It's just you have a little bit of everything. But yeah, like going back to the setting, like it's set in America, but did you go to did you like live here at one point, or was it like I'm just gonna set this in America, I've never lived here before, why not?
No, I did spend a lot of time there, and I was actually dating someone who went to UCLA, and And so I was like, where should they go to college? And I was like, UCLA. Yeah. Cause I know all the hangouts. But then, the actual story itself, like, took place on an island. And I was like, I'm going to make this island very, like, Bali-like. So that was actually a little bit of a cheat for me.
I mean, your book has two things that I absolutely love in stories. And it's, one, big weddings, big, fancy, rich weddings. And the other one is murder. Those are two things that I absolutely love to read.
I so totally did not see that second thing coming. I thought you were going to be like, and food or
no.
Or something lovely.
No, I love murder. Marvin can attest to this.
It's true.
Murder mysteries are usually like my go-to genre. I watch a lot of crime documentaries for like bedtime stuff.
And I feel like a third of the book club picks that we've had have been murder mysteries.
Because the power rests in me when it comes to choosing books. So
who knew Asians wrote so many murder mysteries?
But this is my first time reading a murder book that was so funny though.
I will say, like, you seem to be an expert at surprising people, because like, I came into this book thinking, oh, maybe it's like a murder mystery where you're trying to figure out who really killed this guy. But no, the guy, it's a book about how to hide that she killed this guy.
we totally didn't know how, you know, what genre we were going to submit it as when my agent was like submitting it to publishers. And then she submitted it as Jane the Virgin, but Asian. And I was like, oh, that's perfect. Yeah.
That's a pitch right there, definitely.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found really funny was Mehdi's mom uses a dating app to like catfish a potential, future husband. And that ends up being the victim in the book. And I just thought about how the idea of an Asian parent posing as their child to like get their child to date was like such a relatable and realistic thing that could actually happen.
Oh my God, I know.
Oh, was that something that actually happened or?
Not quite to like that extent, but there I just know of so many Asian parents meddling in the dating lives of their kids, like where my cousins or actually me at one point, we I was like invited to a dinner with like my other cousin, and then when I arrived, of course there was like some guy there who had apparently they just ran into randomly, and they're like, oh, this is like my old friend. And then my cousin and her friend would have to like leave like halfway through and then leave me with this guy. And then later I would find out that like, oh, actually the guy wasn't like my cousin's friend. It was, my parents' friend's son or whatever.
Oh God.
So yeah, there's just a lot of things like that.
Yeah, I've escaped that aspect of being a child of Chinese parents. But I want to say, like, again, like the trigger warning I give to all of my friends is that if you're experienced with aunties, this book will tickle you in ways where a book has never tickled you before. Because I mean, all the encounters with the aunties, like the fights and the blame shifting ninjutsu that they do, is all just so it's just so real. And I guess my question is, these those fights, were they drawn from personal experience or from stories from other people?
Oh no, they were totally like from my family. Because like it would just be like a Tuesday or whatever, and then I would be like, do you want to like call third aunt or whatever, and invite her for a dinner. And then suddenly my parents are like, oh, we're not talking to third aunt. So it's like always shifting, the alliances is always shifting. And there's always like some disagreement. And my, both of my parents, they both have like family companies. So the companies are like kind of shared between them and their siblings. So there's a lot of like, you know, fights and everything. And then later on, like they get resolved and they're like, wow, you did that so well. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you. So yeah, totally drawn from my own family.
I gotta say, I don't think I've ever seen a lot of times when you see aunties in media, like books or TV, they're always just so cartoonish. But like, even if the aunties in this book are cartoonish, there's so much just authenticity in that cartoonishness because, yeah, it's well done. I'll say.
Yeah, you know what's been really amazing is hearing from people from all of like the many different cultures. Like I've been hearing from Indian readers, Jewish readers, Trinidadian readers who are like, oh my God, like how have you written a book about my aunties? So that's actually been really, really nice.
Yeah. And I love that you portray them also as like real people. I was really moved actually by the foreword in your book where you mentioned about like how having struggle with language does not mean you're not smart. It's just a sign of like the sacrifice that people have made to make a life. And I think, you know, a lot of times, especially because the world is so like English and American centered.
Yeah.
Like when someone can't speak English well, the gut reaction is, oh, this person is not intelligent. That's not the case. Like intelligence is not linked to fluency, right? It's like the same way, like when I'm in Japan, I feel like a total dumb because I can't, you know, communicate what I want to say to people, right? So I think, you know, I really enjoyed that, you know, you also imbued these aunties with like such strong and like cunning, you know?
I think cunning is like such a great word to describe like Asian aunties. But yeah, the language part was very important to me because like I always saw my parents as really smart and very savvy. But then when we visited like America, you know, I kind of saw a shift in like how people would react to them. And I remember that like feeling of, why are you treating them that way? You know, they're actually really smart. It's just that it takes them a second to work out what to say in English and stuff like that. So yeah, it's always been something that's close to my heart.
Yeah, I really like how there is code switching in your book, especially when like they're trying to like hide the body or like switch to Mandarin, switch to Indonesian. And that's definitely something that we do as like as Asians. Like we want like no one to hear what we're saying, we're like, okay, switch to the mother tongue so that the white people can't understand. Like that's such like a like an Asian trait. I just like absolutely loved it. And just like the line where I think it was Mehdi's mom who said, oh, I wasted so much money on like your Chinese school. Like
my mom always like, says that.
my parents say this all the time. They're just like, we sent you to Korean school for 10 years and you're like so not funny. Fluent enough. And I'm just like, it's like when you force your child to learn a language, it's not going to come out as great as you think it is.
Yeah. Exactly. And it needs to be like spoken all the time. Like, you know, otherwise you just kind of forget it.
Yeah, definitely. And I just love how the aunties are like, oh, speak in English. Your Mandarin is so bad that you're giving me a headache. And it's just like, wow.
Yeah, one of my aunties, she gets actually really annoyed when I try to speak Mandarin. So she's just like, oh, just speak in Indonesian or something, you know. It's humiliating, like, hearing you speak Mandarin.
I mean, if you think about it, it's like your aunties, your parents, are you know, multilingual. They can speak three languages. Mm-hmm. They can get by. Yeah. But then, like, people like us were just like, nah, yeah. we're stuck with like maybe one and a half, and that's not really going to do us much good abroad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So Dial A for Aunties made news earlier this year because it's got picked up before it even published to be a Netflix. Was it a series or movie?
It's a movie.
Wow. And I gotta say, reading through the book, I'm just imagining how it will look on the screen. And I'm very excited, not only to see the aunties realized in 3D, but also just all the twists, because, man, there are like the last like third of the book alone had like a bajillion twists.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Like, how did that deal come along?
We're actually still not sure, because my agent had, she had just submitted it to publishers. And then she started getting calls from film people, and she would ask them, like, how did you hear of this, you know, or how did you get it? Because I haven't sent it to anyone outside of like book industry. And they would be like, oh, we cannot reveal our sources. So we have no idea who to thank, I guess, for, you know, passing out the manuscript. And so then after that, things kind of happened really quickly. I signed with a film agent, and then she got me like meetings with all these production companies. And then it came to like an auction with four big studios. And I was a complete mess. Like I was just not sleeping the whole time.
It's like its own mystery too.
Yeah.
I can shed a little bit of light on that mystery. So I was an intern for Fox Literary, and pretty much like what they did was they would find manuscripts or news in like the newspaper, and then they would say like, okay, is this adaptable for movie or TV? And if it is, then they start making the calls. But my job as an intern was to look at the book deals that just got signed and be like, okay, is this good enough to be a movie? Yes. So like write it down and then give it to your superior. And then that's when they like start asking for manuscripts. You could totally edit this out, Marvin, because this is not related to the book or interview. I'm just saying.
Intriguing.
We're solving the mystery right now.
I'm just saying that some intern out there was in charge of looking at the database of incoming books, and they read the premise of your book, like Jane the Virgin, but with Asians. There's a crazy rich Asian's wedding, plus there is like a body. And it's like, okay,
Plus aunties. Probably plus, like, triggered by the aunties probably.
I mean, like accidentally killing a blind date too. Yeah, let's add that in there. This sounds like a lot of things.
Oh, wow. That's so awesome. I love that. Thank you so much for the insight.
Yes.
We've solved the mystery. Thank you. Solve Thank you, mystery. Unnamed intern, for finding Dial A for Aunties in the publishing news.
But this book, the story just kind of goes off the rails. I was like, while I was reading it, I was like, oh my God, like what's going to happen? This is so unpredictable. I'm usually very good at guessing what the story beats are going to be, but you just kept surprising me with each chapter. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, you thought that they were going to get rid of this body. No, they're bringing it back inside the hotel. And it's just like, there's so much back and forth. But at the same time, like, you have a corpse and it's grisly. And because there are dark aspects to how this person died. And I'm just curious as to like, was it hard balancing the humor with like the actual mystery beats with like, okay, how are they going to like get the body out? How are they going to like avoid this, this challenge, this conflict? Or did you just have like so much fun writing like the humorous parts that you were like, okay, well, I guess I have to add in some like mystery part here because that's what I promised, right?
So what came first, right?
Yeah, that's true. What came first?
So that's actually a really great question, because you know, you remember how I wrote so many books before I got a single one published. So a lot of those books were actually suspense thrillers, because like you, I really love like murder and reading about them and whatever. But I would try to write these books, and then a lot of my critique partners, they would be like, oh, you're too flippant about murder. Like, why are the characters so like blasé about it, you know, and you need to make it more serious and etc., which was very, very legit. And so then when I wrote Dial A for Aunties and I got to do the humor, it just came so naturally, like, oh, thank goodness, you know, I don't have to, you know, like take it too seriously. So I think the magic was having Mehdi be the one who does take it seriously. And it's like, oh my God, you know, it's a dead body. But then having the aunties be like the ones who are so flippant and who are just so like, you know, oh, why didn't you get the Glad bags? Like, you know, I think that was a really nice balance there. And yeah, I just, that came so, so naturally. Like, of course it would be funny.
I mean, I was just thinking about like how Asian families would have time to squabble as they were getting rid of.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, yeah, the bickering never stops.
Nothing would stop them. Yeah.
Everything is a competition among Asian siblings. So it's just like,
oh, God. Yeah.
You didn't do this right. You didn't get the right trash bag. Like, that's what you get for being a cheapskate.
Yeah. That was actually something that I remember my mom and my aunt, who lives in San Gabriel, actually, having an argument about that. They were not getting rid of a dead body, just to put it out there. But I do remember, like, you know, my aunt being like, why did you get like the generic brand? Why did you get Glad? Like, you know, Glad never tears.
I mean, it made me wonder if, you know, if I killed someone, I'm not going to, but if I did, would my family help me with the body hiding? Probably not. I don't think they will. So I was kind of envious that Mehdi had, you know, four very independent aunties who are just like, we're going to get this done. And, you know, it was a form of love that I really envied, because they're so meddlesome, but also like they seem to be more understanding of, I guess, like Mehdi's want to be something more. I don't want to spoil anything for our listeners, but there's one conversation where Mehdi has a conversation about with her mom about like the family curse with all men in their family like being destined to leave them, and just how, you know, like Mehdi puts so much pressure on herself. She's like, I have to be a wedding photographer for my family. I have to be with my mom. I have to be with my aunties. Whereas like her mom is just like, no, like if this is not something that makes you happy, then you can do other things. It's fine. And I feel like that is so relatable, because a lot of we grow up hearing our parents say, I sacrifice so much for you. And it's like, you're being so selfish, but in the end, it's, you know, like you put so much of this internalized pressure on yourself because you grew up hearing all these things, but it's just like, no, your parents are actually saying, it's okay, do what you want.
And
it's the same thing with you and your writing, right? When, you know, your parents are just like, writing, are you going to starve? Like, this is not the path for you, but they were supportive in the end.
Yeah.
Well, now you're getting a movie, so now they can show off their friends.
That's true. Yeah, they have bragging rights. Totally.
Well, you do have a sequel coming up. Are you already in the works, or are you still?
It's finished.
Oh, wow.
I think it's just going into copy edits, which is where they kind of just tidy it up with like, you know, making sure there are no like errors and everything. So it's pretty much done. We have like a beautiful cover, which I can't wait to be able to reveal. I can probably reveal that it is going to take place in England. So I'm very excited about that. Oh.
Will there also be murder in this one? Or you can't say?
No.
I mean, I feel like that would be a little bit much, you know? Because like you have a character murder someone and then the second book's like, oh no, I killed someone else again. Like that's a serial murderer at that point.
Yeah. I really wanted murder again, you know, because murder is so great in books. But I was really like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know how I would be able to pull that off. Like how many people are these women going to kill? So it's going in a different direction. You know, also like breaking numerous laws, but not murder.
maybe a heist, maybe a robbery here and there.
Yeah, don't worry. It is still like a crime caper.
I think you're definitely paving a path for a new genre here where it's like crime, but make it funny. crime comedy.
And romantic.
All right. Well, as we wind down this interview, Rira, do you have any last questions for?
I don't have any last questions. I just really want to say I had so much fun reading your book. I haven't read The Obsession yet, but since I love murder so much, I will definitely go read it. I'm just like so grateful to have like a book that was so lighthearted, even though there was murder in it. Because like murder mysteries and murder books are definitely like my books of comfort, but they can be a little bit much sometimes. So I'm really glad that this was such a fun read. And also, like, we read a lot of books for this book club, obviously, and we try to diversify as much as we can. But, you know, we're trying to get better with reading more from Southeast Asian authors and South Asian authors. So it's really nice that I got to see a bit more of Indonesian culture in your book, with like the tea ceremony. Like that's something that's very foreign to me, even as an Asian person. Look, you guys, we're not a monolith. like we don't know each other's cultures either. It was like a really nice experience for me. And I'm just like really grateful that I was able to read it. Sorry, that's not a question. Just just compliments here.
That's so nice. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, and same with me. You know, I resonated with. I enjoyed the murder plot or the hiding the murder plot, but I especially enjoyed just like I said, the representation of my hometown was very a pleasant surprise, and just your mastery at grasping the dynamics of auntie culture is unparalleled. So I was very excited, and I've been recommending this book to all my friends who I know share my trauma with aunties and family. Well, Jesse, congratulations on the launch of your book. Congratulations on all 8 books that you have coming out in the next few years. Congratulations on, can't wait to learn more about the movie, and just thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us all the way across the globe.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Yeah. And that was our interview with Jesse Q. Sutanto. You can find her book, The Obsession, and Dial A for Aunties in bookstores everywhere. And yeah, be on the lookout for the other 6 books that she has coming out in the next few years and the upcoming Netflix film version of Dial A for Aunties. Very excited for her future endeavors.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see the screen adaptation of this, because if you thought it was bonkers when you're reading it on the page, imagine it on screen, watching actual people pulling off these hijinks, because
I have
it's something.
Yeah, I have some friends who just don't read, so I'm excited that they'll have their own version of this book to enjoy. And yeah, congrats to Jesse on all her success. But with that, Rira, why don't you remind us about what we're reading for the month of June?
We are reading the sexy second chance romance novel Happy Endings by Tan Kim Lam.
Yeah, it's a it's a sexy book about a sex toy business owner.
Yeah, it's about a Vietnamese American woman who has like a sex toy adult store business, and her parents disapprove. And she has an ex who runs a nearby business. So second chance romance there. It sounds really fun. We have some fun guests that are going to be on that discussion episode.
Yeah, this is going to be a collaboration episode with my other podcast. I do a pop culture podcast called Good Pop. And both my co-hosts, Han and Jess, are both big romance novel fans. So join us as we all send ourselves to horny jail at the end of the month.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be great.
And with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thanks again to Jesse Q. Sutanto for chatting with us. And a big thank you to all of our listeners for joining us once again. We'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @BooksandBoba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Kathy? Kim?
Steve? Where have you been? We haven't seen you for 7 years.
Has it been that long?
Uh-huh.
Oh. I was on a fishing boat. Training. It's part of the plan.
What training? What plan?
The third season of the Korean Drama Podcast!
Okay, we're doing this again? Okay, but there's no body switching in this one, right?
No! The only thing we're switching is the fact that we're going to watch a good drama this time. From 2020, called Itaewon Class! A story about starting a restaurant and a dish that Koreans love called revenge.
I thought you were going to say kimchi jjigae.
I thought you were going to say juk.
Those two. Koreans love those two.
Listen to the Korean Drama Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.